Seven counties along Florida's coastline are under a state of emergency in response to a red tide that is killing marine life and devastating tourism in the state. The red tide is caused by a toxic algae bloom, and so far 267 tons of marine life, including a 21-foot whale shark, have washed ashore since the bloom began. Last month, the state of emergency was also declared for a blue-green algae bloom that began in Lake Okeechobee. State officials have now allocated more than $1 million towards cleanup and restoring tourism. Tracy Fanara is a staff scientist at the Moat Marine Library in Sarasota, and she joins me now. Tracy, thanks for being with us.
Hi, great to be here.
Thank you. And so what's happening in the Gulf, this red tide, and what's happening inland in Lake Okeechobee are considered to be toxic algae blooms. Can you tell us what the difference between these two are?
That's a great question, and it's something really important for people to understand. So red tide is a harmful species of phytoplankton. We get 70% of our oxygen from phytoplankton, but some species are harmful, meaning that they release a toxin, and red tide is one of them. They are a marine species of phytoplankton. The blooms initiate offshore at the ocean bottom. With currents upwelling, they are brought to the top. And then with currents and winds, they are brought inshore. Now, cyanobacteria are it's kind of an umbrella term for photosynthetic bacteria, meaning that they make their own food using sunlight. And there's so many different species of cyanobacteria that I don't think that a lot of people realize. There are marine species of cyanobacteria. There are freshwater cyanobacteria. There are cyanobacteria that are absolutely imperative for the health of the Everglades.
So this is a naturally occurring thing. Algae is part of our ecosystem, but this is algae on steroids, if you will. What is making this bloom? What's creating this sort of disproportionate levels of this type of algae?
That's a great question, too. So red tide is a naturally occurring phenomenon. We have about one a year throughout the Gulf of Mexico. This bloom is unique, but not unprecedented in the fact that it's been going on for so long. This bloom started in late October, November, and has been around ever since. Now it's gone a little bit longer, and then with on top of that, we have the cyanobacteria blooms, which is a direct response of an ecosystem to high nutrients in stormwater, surface water runoff into these bodies of water. Now, in Florida, we have something called Lake Okeechobee. It's a huge lake in the middle of the state. And when there's flooding in South Florida, because we have built so much, the Army Corps of Engineers have built a system to prevent from that flooding by back pumping the water from South Florida into Lake Okeechobee. And then when Lake Okeechobee reaches a certain level, there are two rivers that it outflows to. One is the Caloosahatchee, and that's on the west coast of Florida, and the other is the St. Lucie. So the problems that we're having are in the Caloosahatchee River and Lake Okeechobee, those cyanobacteria blooms, and one species that is existing there right now is harmful, and it's called Microcystin.
And is this something that I'm definitely not a scientist, so I'm trying to understand how this is being, why is it growing? Is it because the temperature in the oceans are rising? Is it pollution? What's forcing this in to really, you know, sort of take over the Florida waterways?
Right. So I have a hypothesis about that. So we know that if a red tide bloom, although initiated offshore, if it's close enough to shore, it can use surface water nutrients to sustain or even exacerbate. We just don't know to what level because we don't have the data. As far as cyanobacteria blooms go, they're a direct response of nutrient loading. So urbanization, fertilizer use, even dog poop. That people choose not to pick up, those that all adds to the nitrogen and phosphorus in our surface water runoff and feeds that cyanobacteria.
Now, in addition to this being obviously an environmental concern, there also, which Florida, as you know, is also, you know, battling on many fronts, and we've reported on this here on The Takeaway, But it's also starting to affect people's lives and people's wallets. Last Sunday, there were a few hundred people in 30 spots across the state that joined hands along the beach to protest the quality of the water. And I want to play a clip from a resident of Stuart, Florida. Her name is Kelly West.
It's been worse than ever. We're seeing, like, you know, all the manatee, the dolphin, the turtles, everything is just washing up, all the bait fish for miles and miles. So why these events are important is so that we can contact our leaders and let them know in a very, you know, vocal way that we oppose what they're doing to our waterways.
What's your reaction to that?
My reaction is that it's not just in the hands of regulators, it's in the hands of the citizens as well, and ethics of industries and agriculture. You know, everybody plays a role in this. And earlier what you said about climate change, my hypothesis is that the season of red tide blooms is shifting into rainy season, and that surface water nutrients can be playing a role in sustaining these blooms. So it's not only a community problem, it's a national problem, a worldwide problem that we keep on building and building and worrying about the economics without worrying about the environment at the same level.
And what I'm curious also, what is the impact on, and we talked a little bit about the tourism impact, obviously that's a big issue for Florida, but there's also environmental issues, but there's also the impact on an individual's health. If people come in contact with this, whether they realize it or not, could they be facing any health issues?
Oh, yeah. And that's what makes red tide so special, is that the toxin can aerosolize, meaning it could attach on to sea salt particles, move on shore, and cause a healthy person to cough or have itchy eyes, sneeze. But for those with asthma or COPD, this can be very serious. And so that's why we've developed so many technologies to educate and inform the public so they can make healthy decisions when going to a beach. Red tide is generally really patchy. So you could go to one beach and experience those effects, and go to a beach a mile up the road and not experience those effects. So we have three different ways of getting that information to the public.
Tracy Fenar is a staff scientist at the Moat Marine Library. Tracy, thanks for your insights.
No problem.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.